Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Live Your Full Potential podcast. Today, I have someone that I actually haven't seen in quite a few years, but someone that I still consider my friend, Mr. Will Polston. We share similar paths, similar stories, journeys, and the same passions for high performance and helping people tap their full potential and ultimately live their full potential and live their best life. Will is a performance coach, a speaker, as well as other things, and an author. And we are here to talk about his book, North Star Thinking, which, you know, before I hand over to you, Will, I just wanted to say what I shared before camera, which is all about aligning your life to your values. And there are so many tools and strategies, some that I want to ask you about, some that I've never heard, but so many tools and strategies for people to be able to, one, figure out their North Star, figure out the path, figure out what it is that's missing in their life for them to be able to take that path towards their North Star and ultimately live their full potential. I love that you help work. I love that you want to work with ambitious people. It's actually the reason why I went from life coaching to performance coaching, because generally performance coaches work with ambitious people. But anyway, I'm looking forward to this conversation. It's such a pleasure to have you here, man. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. And likewise, looking forward to our conversation, catching up. And yeah, I know that the topic of which we're going to be discussing is something we're both very inspired by and yeah, have a keen interest in. So hopefully it's going to make some good listening for those that are listening.
I mean, even for my followers, students, clients, etc., if I'm all about that, this is definitely going to bring value to them, and just from a different perspective or from a different angle. I want to also thank you for, because you really didn't have to do it, for sending my copy of your book all the way to Thailand. That was really, really generous of you, you know, to do that. So to get that book in the post and unpack it, and it was so wonderfully wrapped and with a message inside and the card, just massive gratitude, bro. Massive gratitude. Thanks so much. And I'm enjoying reading it so much. I'm about halfway through.
My pleasure.
So first of all, on the book, you know, many people write books, many people publish books, self-publish books. I would even say it's easier now than it's ever been to get a published book, right? Because you just hear of people publishing books all the time. But what made your book different for me when I picked it up was the insane amounts of praise for the book. Like, that is amazing, from truly extraordinary people, just quote after quote after quote after quote. So massive well done on that. And I love that you had the foreword written by Dr. John DeMartini, because if anyone doesn't know, he is the grandfather, don't tell him that, of figuring out how to live a life that is true to your values. So yeah, massive well done, dude. How was it, the process of putting the book together? What made you write the book, and how did it feel to get all of that incredible praise from those influential people and connections and friends, including one of your teachers, Dr. John DeMartini?
It was an experience, let's say. You know, it's to go back, first of all, I suppose start at the beginning, because that's always the best place to start a story, is that the first personal development book that I ever read was a book called The Secret, which many people have heard of, by Rhonda Byrne. It's about the law of attraction. And one of the key people in it is Dr. John DeMartini. And what not a lot of people know is that actually when The Secret was first going to be created, it was originally just going to be six people, and John was going to be one of those six. And then it evolved onto other 36 people or whatever that are mentioned in the book and the film. And yeah, from that moment, when I first read that book in 2008, 2009, I realized that, wow, this is incredible. And then kind of followed his work from then. And to then have him write the foreword was like a full circle moment. I've done a lot of John's work. I've done lots of training with him. I regard him as a friend. I mean, we email often each other and share various things. So it's it was great. And I was very honored to have a lot of great people write the praise. And I think one of the things that's really important for me, and you've mentioned it already, is that it's easier now than ever to write a book. And sometimes when things are easy in life, that can be detrimental, because when things are hard, I mean, you know as well as I do, a lot of the time it's short-term pain, long-term gain, short-term gain, long-term pain. So it's, for me, it was something that this the idea of wanting to write a book, I wanted to write a book for many, many, many years, but something for whatever reason was preventing me from doing it. To some people might call it procrastinating, but I genuinely think there were certain lessons that I didn't feel I had learned well enough to want to share. And there's stuff right up until the end of when we did the final sort of reviews of the book that I was still adding in, because I'm like you, I'm a lifelong learner. I'm constantly learning. Every week I'm learning something new. So for me, the book never felt finished. It was like, but there's more to add. There's more to add. There's more. I want to cram as much in as possible. Or I was taking concepts that I've been sharing for 4, 5, 6 years that I had distilled down into a more succinct or more efficient way of supporting people with. So that was the part that made it challenging. But the thing that was really important and stuck with me the whole way through the book is that so many people these days, particularly if they're looking to commercialize their knowledge, they use their book as almost like a fancy PDF, you know, or a fancy business card. And I didn't want that. I wanted people to be able to read the book from start to finish. And even if they never did anything with me, it could still have a significant impact on their life, like so many of the other books that I'd read. So that was the thing that was really important for me. I wanted to ensure that people could read this book from cover to cover, implement the exercises, because there are a lot of exercises I put in the book, so they don't have to come to the course or do the program or whatever that would impact them. So yeah, that was the thing that that made it challenging. But I think that it also gave me the ability or the confidence that when I felt that it was ready, I could put it out to people that I respected and say, look, I've written this book. I would love your thoughts on it. And that's why I believe I got the praise the praise from the people that I respect in the way that I did, was because I first and foremost wrote the book in a way that was impactful for people.
I watched a video from Alex Hormozi. I'm assuming you know who he is. And yeah. He was speaking about leverage and action and input. And he was saying that if you did 20 times more work, you'd have 1,000 times more the result. But people don't get the result because they're not willing to do that 20 times more work. I'll be completely honest with you. I've written, I lost count now, 9 or 10 books. And they were not written the way you wrote your book. They were written for I'll use your words, as a PDF, a free gift, as a way for people to understand a bit about what I do. But I never, and I'm just being totally transparent, I never wrote one of my books to think this book will change someone's life. And maybe that's for my next book, but you can rarely tell that difference in your book. You know, for me, I've always said a book is the best business card you can ever have, but yours is so much more than that. And, you know, you share some things in your book that I've never heard before. Maybe you borrowed them from someone else, but that's what I love about being a student of life, is you're always learning new things. And one of the things you talk about is there are 4 types of ambitious people. To get people to go and buy the book, I would love for you to share a bit about what that means and what the result is of being one of those, or all of those 4 types of ambitious people, because I found it very fascinating.
Thank you. So in answer to your question, first of all, no, that's something that I've not sort of borrowed or developed. It's something that I've just realized. So
it's really cool.
To give some context for people that maybe are not too familiar with me. So today I've worked with about 2,000 entrepreneurs and business owners. I've done about 6,000 hours of one-on-one coaching. And what that's done is taught me a lot of the patterns of behavior with those that achieve success, quote unquote, versus those that don't. Of course, success is subjective, whatever people define it to be. And I love learning. I'm obsessed with learning, everything from sort of hermeticism right back to stoicism and neurolinguistic programming and a whole bunch of different modalities. And what I'm often trying to do is take these what could seemingly complex subjects and distill them down into the most simple way that I can. And what I've realized is those that are achieving a degree of success they've got three components that are really helping them. One is absolute clarity, so they know exactly where they are and exactly where they want to get to. Two, they're taking intelligent action. So my definition of intelligent action is taking action that's aligned with your values and your goals. And three is they have active accountability. They have somebody to hold their feet to the fire. High performers want accountability. Low performers don't. And I feel that when I look at those different people, I've been able to notice a really common pattern. So first of all, with those that are lost. So people that are lost are, or in fact, anyone that's feeling any of the three that I'm about to first mention are experiencing what I call the RIF symptoms. The RIF symptoms are stress, overwhelm, frustration, depression, anxiety, unfulfillment, or any flavor of negative emotion. But ultimately, I believe that any negative emotion is simply a signal. It's a signal to think or act differently. And those that are the first category, which are the lost, they're the people that have got kind of no idea where they're going. They're just drifting through life and they're like a bit of driftwood on a river. They eventually end up washed up somewhere they don't want to be, you know, but there's somebody that both you and I have learned a lot from, Tony Robbins. He refers to Niagara syndrome, you know, where people they get to the point where they end up sort of they're down the river too far with no oars and eventually end up kind of going over the side. And that's where they have, because they get caught up in the current affairs and the current fears of everything that's going on. Eventually they end up having that big crash, whether it's emotionally or mentally, physically, whatever it is. And those are the people that are lost. Then you've got the people that are frustrated. So the people that are frustrated, they do have clarity, whereas the lost don't, right? So the people that are frustrated, they've got, hey, I know where I want to go. I know what I want to be doing. And this is what I want. This is what I want. I'm clear on that. And that's cool.
But I'm not doing
but that. They're not taking intelligent action. So they're taking loads of, they're like the hamster in the hamster wheel. You know, they're running really fast. They're doing loads of things, but the action they're taking is ineffective. It's not as effective.
I can think of so many people there.
Right. So they're the people that are frustrated. And then the third group of people are those that are procrastinating. So people procrastinate for a number of different reasons. In my experience, I've witnessed it to be often that they don't have clarity. Or if they do have clarity and they're not taking the action, it's because they don't have accountability. Now, sometimes people have clarity, but they don't have absolute clarity. So what I mean by that is that people think that they know what they want to be doing, but actually it's not absolute clarity. So it's not in alignment, basically. So there's like I physically feel it. If I'm going to do something or I think I need to do something, but it's not aligned with what I really want to do, I basically stop myself. You know, it's like having one foot on the accelerator, one foot on the brake. I'm stopping myself from doing that thing. And it's only when I realize that it's because I'm not in alignment, then I can pass on those. So they're the first three. Now, the fourth are what I call the successful. Now, success is subjective. Lots of people have got their own definition of success, and it is absolutely not my intention or desire to impress upon anybody what success should be. Success is completely down to the individual. But what I do believe that tends to be is people being, doing, and having what they desire. So what they want to be, do, and have, that's up to them. But then being, doing, and having what they desire is kind of my definition of what success is. So a lot of people, they achieve a level of success. So they're being, doing, and having what they desire, but then they can plateau. So they achieve the outcome of what it is that they want, or they achieve the things that they want to be, do, and have, and then they find themselves going, right, well, kind of, is this it? You know, is this where I've got to? Is that it? Mm-hmm. And that's where, for me, the whole concept of having a North Star comes in, because so many people, they set short-term objectives and they achieve them, you know, short-term goals, whether it's a goal for a year from now, whether it's a health goal, whether it's a relationship goal, family goal, business goal, money goal, whatever it is, and they achieve it. So then they set another one, you know, I'm going to set another goal, and then they achieve it. Then they set another goal and they achieve it. They set another goal. And after they've done that four or five times, they actually find themselves becoming really unfulfilled. I've worked with some incredibly successful people that are unfulfilled, even when they're achieving their goals. And I believe the reason for that is because they're constantly chasing the next high. You know, I call it when-then syndrome. When I achieve this, then I'll be happy. When I achieve that, then I'll be okay. When I do this, then it'll be all right, whatever that is. Whereas the whole concept of a North Star is, if you study lots of great leaders. You know, back to 2,000 years ago, Aristotle spoke about the telos, the Stoics spoke about the logos, Napoleon Hill spoke about the chief aim. Robert Greene talks about planning to the end. Stephen Covey talks beginning with the end in mind. They've all spoken about the end in some degree. Mm. But there's quite a famous story. You've probably heard of it. It involves a baby born in December a couple of thousand years ago, right? And there were three men, supposedly wise, all carrying presents. And they went to find this baby that was born in this stable, or so the story goes. Now, what happens is that they found this baby, but what was guiding them was the North Star. Now, they never went to the North Star. All they did was use it as a guiding light. And I believe that if you can have a goal in life that's so big that you accept that you're never going to achieve it, then you can detach from the outcome and you can focus on the process. You can fall in love with the process.
Love that.
And then every day, it's no longer about, well, I'm this far away from my goal. It's, I've got this much further today. And it's constantly about expansion. So abundance is like that constant expansion. And we can live our life from that place rather than trying to close this gap all the time and looking at how close we're getting to the gap. That's kind of how I see it. So that for me is about having that North Star. That's the equivalent of trying to empty the sea with a spoon. It's just going to be impossible. You're never going to do it. But then you've got something to strive towards every day with an ever growing greater energy and impact that you can have on others.
I love that. And just to off the back of what you just shared, to have a goal so big, just to reiterate what you were saying, to have a goal so big that you don't actually think you can achieve it, then there's no attachment to the goal. That is freedom. That is freedom to do what you love, to live the life that you want, because you're not thinking there's an outcome. You're just going, well, there's no outcome. I might as well do what I want in the direction of whatever my North Star is, regardless of whether I hit it or not. That's really awesome, dude. You touched on, when you were sharing that, you touched on another framework of yours that I fucking loved. And it's a really, to be honest, it's a really long-winded name for your framework, but it's the framework to love your life. Can you just share that again? Because it is so incredibly simple. But I can say, after 20 years of coaching people in the same arena that you have, that it's highly effective.
I forgot what part was it specifically you said the long name, so you throw me the
absolute clarity.
All right.
Let's call it your own personal triad.
Yeah, yeah. So the three components. So having absolute clarity, taking intelligent action, and having active accountability. It's those three components. And if one's missing, then it has an impact. You know, if you have accountability and you're taking intelligent action, but you don't have absolute clarity, you're directionless. You know, if you have clarity and accountability, but you're not taking intelligent action, you're frustrated. And if you have clarity, absolute clarity, and you're taking intelligent action, but you don't have accountability, then you're more likely to procrastinate. So yeah, it's
no one's holding your feet to the fire. And actually, when the higher level I go in my own coaching, the more accountability there is. And the more accountability there is, the more intelligent action there is, and the more clarity there is. I think it's an absolutely brilliant framework.
Thank you.
Just the name is too long.
Yeah, I need to come up with a better name.
It's like, it was the clarity, absolute clarity, the intelligent action, and the something accountability framework. I was like, I'm just going to call it the framework to love your life.
Yeah,
you mentioned
better.
A story. Let's talk about another story, because I've never actually, one, shared this in a video, and two, I've never heard anyone else share this story. But I found it in an amazing documentary that I've shared with so many clients over the years called Finding Joe. Have you seen it?
Finding Joe? I don't think I have, no.
Well, Finding Joe is about Joseph Campbell, the philosopher, and the story of the hero's journey.
Ah, right. Yeah,
and
the hero's
opening
journey, yeah.
Scene is of the Golden Buddha. Talk to us about the Golden Buddha, because this is a beautiful and powerful story. And I didn't actually realize that you go into detail in so many areas in your book, but I didn't actually realize it was in Bangkok.
Bangkok,
and you actually
yeah.
name the temple where it is. So thanks to reading your book, I'm actually going to go visit it in the next couple of months. But yeah, tell us about the Golden Buddha.
So here's the thing that I think is really interesting is that in the world of personal development, there is maybe a perception from so many people that they need to have more, be more, do more, get fixed, whatever it is. Whereas the concept of the Golden Buddha is a really good metaphor. So basically, about 70 years ago, there was a big clay Buddha in Bangkok, and it was at a monastery, and it needed to be moved for a new road that was going to go through Bangkok. So obviously they had to move it. And as the people, whoever it was, the workers that were coming in to move this giant clay Buddha moved it, they noticed it started to crack. So obviously they're really worried and thinking, oh my God, this ancient sort of monument, we're cracking it. But then they noticed something a little bit more unique, which was in the cracks, they could notice this glistening and this shining. So they shone a torch and they could see even more. And they thought, well, this looks like gold. So gradually what they started doing, it was just obviously being curious, I guess, is peeling it back. And then they revealed this giant golden Buddha. But what's even more fascinating about it than just thinking you've got a clay Buddha and realizing that it's actually gold is how it actually came about. So hundreds of years ago, the monks had this giant golden Buddha, and they knew that they're about to be attacked by the Burmese army, and they didn't want this golden Buddha being stolen. So what they did is they covered it with clay, because who wants a clay Buddha? You know, it's not got no value or not got as much value, whatever. So they covered it in all of the clay to protect it. And it acts as a metaphor, because so many times in life, we start off golden. You know, we start off with great intentions. We don't judge people. We have pure beliefs. We do certain things. But then what happens over time, we fear being attacked, or we maybe get attacked. And what we do is we start to cover ourselves up. We cover up the parts of us that are golden to protect ourselves. And after a while, we keep layering on the clay to the point where we aren't golden anymore. Yeah. And we forget who we are, forget the parts of us that are that are the reason that we shine. Now, why this is so poignant is because obviously hundreds of years later, the golden Buddha was rediscovered. And so many times in life, I think that what we need to do is just peel back the clay that we've layered over ourselves, that we've used at some point in our life as a form of protective mechanism, and realize that actually we're our best when we're shining, when we're being our golden Buddha. And that's really the concept of the story.
I love the detail that you went into with that story. And, you know, for most people, it doesn't even seem like something they can do, or for a lot of people, I don't want to say most people. So it's very important to people listening and watching that you can do it one tiny piece at a time, because like the story shares, all it takes is a little bit of clay to be removed for you to actually realize that there's something greater. And once you realize, I think this is actually taken almost word for word from this documentary, once you realize that there's gold underneath, there's no going back, because all you want to do in your life is you want to keep peeling away the layers to discover more gold. And your book is really good at doing that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think there's the famous, is it Marianne Williamson quote, like the poem, I know it's in Coach Carter, it says, it's not our dark that most frightens us, it's our light. Yeah, it's I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember it word for word, but I think it's so true. You know, what happens is it's so easy. You know, it's like the kids at school that don't try, because then if they don't try their best, if they don't get the outcome they want, they've got the excuses. And yeah, but I didn't try. It was, I wasn't doing my best. I wasn't giving it my all. So that they're protecting themselves, because if they did give it their all and it wasn't to go the way they wanted, then they've given themselves that safety net. And look, we've all done it. We all do it from time to time. And it's being able to break through that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't go after what they want because they're afraid to fail. They're scared to be judged, etc. But if you truly believed you were golden, and massively golden, you would just go do anything you want.
Mm.
You would live your purpose.
Mm.
And you talk about purpose in your book. You talk about being, and you know, you mentioned before, be, do, have. When I share it in reverse. Most people know what they want to have. A lot of people know what to do, but not many people or not enough people realize that they need to be a certain person. And for me, purpose is a being word. Like if you look at the Japanese exercise, ikigai, working out your ikigai in brackets, your reason for being is a doing word. Can you share a little bit about purpose, the importance and significance of living in your own true, unique purpose and what you cover in the book?
So I've been obsessed for decades now of learning why people do what they do. So I touch on in the book my story, which I'm not going to go into now, but basically everything that I do revolves around an experience that I had, or everything I do now revolves around an experience that I had when I was about 11 years old to do with my dad, and how my dad didn't do certain things and the impact that had on him and my mum and me and my family and a whole host of other people. Mm. But the short version is that I've got two very wealthy uncles. One's a billionaire, the other one's a multimillionaire. And dad always used to say they just got lucky. Now, even at 11 years old, I never believed that. I was like, lucky. Like, even to today, still to today, I don't believe in luck. You'll never hear me say good luck to anybody because I don't believe in it. And I've become obsessed with learning, like, what is it that people do, like, in terms of the action, but what is it that they think? Like, what's going on in between the ears that enables some people to do things and other people to not, even if they've got the same information? Like, I've been fascinated by that for decades. And one of the things that I found is that certain people just have this innate drive, this innate desire to do things. I call it a renewable energy, like this renewable energy source to keep going and going and going. And one of the best ways I heard it explained was by a mentor of mine. You mentioned him already. It was Dr. John DeMartini. So he talks a lot about living aligned with your values. So what I had also noticed was that people that are really driven, they've normally had some sort of experience at some point in the past in their life where they perceive a void. They perceive something to be missing. And the bigger they perceive that perception of the void to be, the more important it is for them to be able to do that thing, right? So that's basically how values are created. A value is a perception of a void, keyword being perception. It doesn't necessarily mean that it is missing. And when we look at that and we go, right, well, what's people's highest values? So we identify what the highest values are, sort of top 3-4 values. We get an indication of what's most meaningful to them. Now, that said, if we look at other people, so we've all had experiences in life where we have lived to other people's values. So we've been incongruent, we've not been in alignment, whatever you want to call it. That's when we constantly need external motivation. That's when we need the G up all of the time. That's when we need that, whatever that motivation might be. But what's really telling is the language we're using as well. So when you're using words like I have to, I ought to, I should, I need to, that's an indication you're living somebody else's values. Now, they may not have ever been, you may not consciously know that they're other people's values because they've been injected into you or projected onto you from when you're a kid. You know, parents, grandparents, even society can have an impact on the way that we think we should or shouldn't do certain things. But when we're living our own values and we're in complete alignment, we use things like words like I love to, I choose to, I desire to. But what's key is that at that point we're in inspiration. So inspiration, in spirit. What's another word for spirit? Energy. You're in your energy. So people think they burn out because they're working too hard. They don't. People burn out because they're not spending enough time doing the stuff that they love doing. So when we combine that with doing the stuff that we love doing in a way that has a greater impact. I used to do an exercise at one of my events, and I've done this with hundreds and hundreds of people. And I used to ask a bunch of questions, but one of the questions that I would ask is, if imagine you lived your whole life exactly how you'd love to live it, what would you have done to make the world a better place? And it will always link back to other people. It's never about the thing I've done to become to make the world a better place is being the world's richest person or being this or being that. It's always that will be something that has an impact on other people to some degree. And if you then combine the things that you love doing, knowing that it has an impact on other people, that for me is where that purpose piece and that mission piece ties in, which you talk about Ikigai. So the Ikigai is four components. What do you love doing? What are you good at? Which is, you would argue, are kind of values. What does the world need? So how do you impact others? And how can you be paid to do it? Because if you can be paid to do it, then it's, I believe, it's more sustainable in the long term. And that's the part that's fascinating. Now, what a lot of people don't necessarily know about an Ikigai is that, so it was born off of, the whole concept was created and sort of originated off of an island just off Japan called Okinawa. And when
your depth of knowledge, bro.
Thank you. But what's fascinating is they have more centurions and more people that have lived to over 100 years old than anywhere else on the planet, right? Because they live by this concept of the Ikigai. They've got their reason for being, they've got their purpose. But how many stories do we know of people that have worked their whole life, they retire at 65, and then within a year or two they die? It's because that was their purpose their whole life. Or people that are in a relationship.
Sorry to interrupt respectfully, or your purpose is your partner, you spend your whole life with them, they die, and like 2 weeks later or month later you die. It's crazy.
100%. You see it, or you see it, we've all got story because they've not got the purpose. Whereas when you've got this purpose, the North Star, that is never can be filled, it's something that you can constantly work towards. And I talk a lot about the ripple effect. So without going into the full story, what I perceived was my dad not doing certain things and how that had a negative impact on not only him, but my mum, me, my family, and a whole host of other people. Now, when you realize that actually you achieving your full potential isn't just beneficial for you, yes, you're going to feel more energized and more fulfilled, and you're going to have a glow about you, and people are going to say, wow, you've got a spring in your step. But the real impact is the impact you have in your family, your friends, your community, society, humanity, the universe. That's the real power of having your purpose, 100%. I believe.
And there's so much power in purpose. And I believe that without purpose, there is no passion. And without passion, there is no life. There is only existence. So I highly recommend that, you know, based on this conversation, I hope it's inspired you to go and get this book. Will, thank you again so much, bro. It's been a pleasure to catch up with you, to talk with you, to go deep into what truly matters to you. And I hope you make this book everything that it can be, and without doubt you will make it happen. Thank you, bro. Really appreciate you being here, and thanks to everyone listening and watching. Please press the like button, share button, whatever you can to help us get these episodes as far as possible. Thank you so much. Cheers, Will.
Thank you everyone for listening, and thank you, JP.